A Rayo Original Podcast.
Step into our confessional. Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. From Greatest Hits Radio, Simon Mayo's Confessions.
The cheeky little laugh you heard right at the very beginning of that jingle was from Holly, who found it, the whole thing, hilarious. Oh. She just knows what's coming, and she's already laughing, as indeed is the world.
Yes, aren't we all? We're all laughing inside, aren't we?
It's the world's favourite comedy podcast.
It is.
It's the UK's number one podcast. That's what it is. And what?
Is it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. We've decided it is, and apparently that's how it works.
If you say it often enough,
okay,
it becomes true. Sister Susie is not in the pub. She's actually in the studio.
Right here.
Brother Matthew, though, still is in the car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Sister Holly is basically in charge of the cupboard of tat and anything else, and also Martin Kemp. But Martin Kemp is
He will not be featuring in this podcast.
He also doesn't live in the cupboard of tat.
No, he doesn't. No.
What is going on?
Well,
Let's get into the domestic living arrangements for Martin Kemp, shall we?
Yes.
Let's do that. Pepsi and Shirley.
Shirley? Yeah. No, just Shirley.
Just Pepsi and Shirley now?
Yeah. No, not Pepsi.
Pretty sure I'm right. Anyway, let's move on.
We're going to be, I don't know. Later, maybe, we're going to head over to the parish notice board, the PNB, as the kids call it, for some flattery and some correspondence. We'll briefly stop at the Mark Knopfler Not For Broadcast section, and of course, you get to hear all of the fabulous confessions from a full week of drive time. There's a thing. Mm. Including George's rowing tale, messing about on the river, that made Matt make this noise.
A what?
Yes.
That
was a real shock, wasn't it? Because I absolutely didn't see that one coming at all.
You were shooketh.
Correct.
Mm. Shooketh.
Yeah. So that's on the way. Bert's confession, chim chim chiru. Gary's fate fiasco, summertime. But first we are heading to a pop quiz presented by an up-and-coming DJ. For Martin's confession, what's the buzz? Tell me what's a-happening.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Today's confession comes from Martin. I think we could say Martin in Belfast. Father Ooh. Simon, Brother Matt, Sisters Susie and Holly, my confession comes from the late 80s, when I was a sixth former and attended school in Belfast. I was a young lad interested in music, and when a well-known national radio station of the day announced they were running a school pop quiz competition, a couple of schoolmates and I decided to put a team together and enter. The quiz was to be hosted by an up-and-coming DJ, making his name with this aforementioned radio station. After a rigorous selection process, we were delighted to hear that we were selected to represent our region and go forward to the live show recordings. We were drawn against a school in London, and excitedly off we travelled to England for the contest. The quiz was recorded in the host school's assembly hall with an audience of school kids and consisted of various rounds of music questions, both team questions and individual questions, and finished with a quick-fire buzzer round. After a fairly tight contest going into the final buzzer round, the scores were tied. The frenetic buzzer round went so fast I lost track of who was winning, so when the up-and-coming DJ received the final score from the production assistant, everyone was waiting with bated breath for the final score. The anticipation turned to disappointment as it was announced that we had sadly been beaten by a single point and we had to bow out of the competition. As we said our goodbyes to the other team and the production crew, I cheekily asked the up-and-coming DJ for a copy of the script and quiz questions as a souvenir of our time on the quiz. The script contained all the questions asked on the day and a big bumper selection of buzz-around questions, not all of which were asked on the day. He not only obliged, he also autographed the script for good measure, and off we went on our way back to Belfast, and that was the end of our time on the quiz. Or maybe it wasn't. A week or so later, my school received a phone call from the National Broadcasting Company that we're referring to inform us that there was a mistake in the score calculation in the previous round, and we in fact had actually won.
Wow!
We were back in, and so we were now into the semi-finals, and this time it was in Glasgow. That fixture was a somewhat easier contest, and the quiz was pretty much over before we got to the buzzer round. After a couple of questions in the buzzer round, I realised that some of the questions were quite familiar and that I had heard or possibly read them before. And it was then I realised that whilst all the questions in the earlier rounds were different, all the questions being asked in the buzzer round were all contained in the script I had been given in the previous round when we thought we were out by that kind and very naturally sexy presenter.
When did that come up?
I don't know where that came from. Yeah,
no.
I managed to answer a good number of questions in the buzzer round while I did know all the answers, and we won comfortably. As we were now through to the final, I now had a dilemma. Do I own up and admit that I had sight of some of the questions, or do I stay quiet and hope that there would be some of the questions contained in the script that would also be in the final?
Mm.
Well, to everyone's surprise, I chose the latter. The final was another trip, and we were pitted against a Welsh school whose team included a pupil whose pop knowledge was simply unbelievable. And as we got to the final round, we were lagging well behind on the scoreboard. The only thing that we could hope for was putting a bit of a gloss on the defeat by clawing some points back in the buzzer round. As the up-and-coming DJ started asking the questions, I was delighted that yet again the questions being asked were contained in my secret copy of the script.
Yes. Mm.
I quickly pressed the buzzer, furiously answering question after question, impressing my teammates with unfeasibly quick response times and knowledge of obscure pop music facts. Infuriatingly, the other team actually got some questions as well, despite me knowing the answers. We were well beaten in the end, however, my performance in the last round took the bad look off the score and really impressed my teammates and school friends. This secret has stayed with me for many, many years. However, I now wish to ask for forgiveness, not to the other teams in the competition, as both contests weren't decided on the buzzer round, not to the up-and-coming DJ or the national radio station involved, or perhaps having an advantage with some of the questions. They messed up the scores in the earlier round, and then they gave me the questions. I would like to apologise to my teammates and school friends, who for years thought that I was a pop music genius. But actually, I believe this up-and-coming DJ did okay for himself in his career and still broadcasts to this day, and this script scandal didn't hold him back. Martin in Belfast, right? And there's a photograph here of the of Martin in Belfast with the up and coming DJ.
Yes, the up and coming DJ. There he is.
It looks a bit like me, but
it does. Yeah.
I do remember that, and I also remember that although I realise he's not going to come out of this particularly well. The show was produced by Mark Radcliffe.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, and obviously, so it's Mark's fault.
Oh, right. We're passing it on to him, are we? I thought it was you that gave him the script.
Well, that is also true. And I did do that. So basically, it's my fault. That's entirely correct.
A little bit.
But Martin is asking for forgiveness because he has allowed for decades, allowed the impression to fester that he is fantastic at pop, whereas actually he's not. Sister Suze.
Well, yes. I kind of hear what Martin says. What he's doing, and you know, I know he says that they weren't won on the buzzer round in each of those rounds, but essentially you cheated, didn't you? Really, you knew the answers, and you didn't do it once; you did it twice. You could have said after the first thing, "Oh, by the way, you gave me the answers when you gave me the script, and therefore they would have been changed." But also, I think whoever was writing the questions was probably a bit lazy as well, wouldn't they? They should have done a bit more research.
It's the system, I think, that was at...
On their system. But I think, essentially, he cheated and, you know, he should have just done a bit of research and got his pop knowledge a bit better.
Yeah, big cheater.
In the start.
That's what he is.
So, yeah, big cheater.
Matthew, what do you
say? Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say he didn't really cheat. I mean, it wasn't as if he broke into the broadcaster headquarters Tom Cruise style and ran off with all of the answers. He was given them, wasn't there, by the up and coming DJ. And surely and there's somewhat the onus being on the production assistant who should have come up with Mark Radcliffe. Should have come up with some different questions, shouldn't you, Mark? Should have come up with some different ones. So maybe it's on him. And also he had to be really good at knowledge there to get there where he was in the first place. So really nothing to forgive. Yes, definitely forgiven.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
For legal reasons, I will assume all of the blame for that, and Mark is blameless.
Okay, let's say that. Yeah. Good work. Good
story.
Work. Yeah.
Even though I'm slightly resentful.
Yeah, I think it's probably Mark.
Yeah. We're going to turn now to the parish notice. By the way, if you have any other confessions about quizzes that I've been involved with, by all means, send them in. Who knows where we're going to go?
Yeah, which other quizzes could they bring
Well, I did the lottery for some
years. Yeah.
On the telly.
Uh-huh.
If there were problems with that, though,
yeah,
that
Oh, that'd be a problem.
That would be
it?
A problem.
Yeah. Mm.
Yes. Okay.
So also, you wouldn't want to give any money back. So
yeah, if you've got a winning lines confession, then keep it to yourself. Or yeah, just keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
I don't want to know about it.
No, because it's too late. Yeah.
Right, we're going to turn now to the PNB, the Parish Notice Board, your one-stop shop for all important messages, saintly updates, and all the reviews praising Matt more than anything else, because that is the sole criteria that Matt uses when he tries to select this correspondence.
Indeed I do, and I think people are starting to cotton on to this, thankfully. So we begin with Zenery.
Not a name.
Zenery says, 5 stars. I've been a listener since the place before the other place. Which is that? Anyway,
Radio 1.
Radio 1. All right. Always particularly like the Mark Knopfler section and the gang are so funny. Simon's not bad either. My favourite confession is from Radio 1. All right, right, I've not read this, yeah. But my prediction is it's a confession from Radio 1. We would definitely not be able to do this now.
Correct.
There we go. Okay, so students set up a copy of their mate's room on the ground floor rather than the real one on the 10th floor of the halls. They got him drunk and confused, so he thought the room was his. And they threw him out of the window.
Yeah, he thought he was on.
Oh my goodness!
He was in his room on the 10th floor, and for a joke, they chucked him out the window. And he thought, obviously, for like a couple of seconds, that he was
going to die.
Right, Matt. Wouldn't. I don't think there's any way that would be a because it is really quite horrible.
Yeah, that's really not nice at all.
No.
Yeah. So, different times though, as Zenery points out. So that's fair enough. Ben Murdoch, BMDI, BIMD. Ben Murdoch, BM, that's probably something. Young person speak, BMDI, what does that mean?
It sounds quite BMDI. Rude.
Not a clue. Yeah, and,
Big Matt, no, let's not try.
Let's not try.
Okay, so Big Murdoch, Ben Murdoch,
just
rather.
Big Ben Murdoch
says, 5 stars. yes, this is a shameless attempt to get Matt to read my review, but I genuinely love the podcast and the Drive Time show and All Request Friday and that Sunday show that Simon does with the albums. But back to Matt, the saviour of our land with his wit and wisdom. He's a guiding light for forgiveness and tolerance. Maybe not tolerance. The system's fault, but he just tries to see the good in even the most unforgiving of circumstances. Well said, Ben, yes. Also, lots of praise to Father Simon and the Sisters of Mercy, Susie and Holly. They also contribute a bit. Hashtag emoji, winky face.
There's no hashtag.
There it is. It's the hashtag emoji. It's literally there.
It's no,
there's no hashtag before the emoji.
It's
just an emoji.
Pretty sure I'm right. Anyway,
where's the hashtag?
Where? It's just there in the thing. That's how they say it. And Wheelie Witty says, 5 stars, a proper giggle, often guffaw. I listen to this on the bus on the way to work. I often snigger and occasionally lol. It wouldn't be so bad, but I'm a wheelchair user and have to travel facing the other passengers. Is my embarrassment cupboard de tat worthy? Is his embarrassment enough for something from the cupboard de tat, Holly?
Well, the only way you can get something from the cupboard de tat is by emailing. And this is just a review, which is very, very nice. And we love a 5-star review.
Yeah,
fantastic. Wheelie Witty.
I think if Wheelie Witty did email confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk, then maybe that would be worthy of some tax.
Maybe if Wheelie Witty sent money, would that help?
Oh, that's a good
idea.
I don't
think they should send money. Yeah, don't think they need to send money.
Isn't that the way it works?
No. Let's make that the precedent. I like that one. Yes, please.
That's very good. Anyway, Susie has been wandering past the notice board and this has caught her eye.
I have. I've got a notice from a police officer.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
Right here, who says, good afternoon to Simon and the collective. Just a quick email. As a long-term listener, I feel it's finally time to email. After 17 years in the military and my current job as a police officer in an unnamed county force, for ease, refer to it as Stanford Constabulary, my confession will remain tight-lipped, but I may confess to the time I moonlighted as a pretend Australian in Germany as a 15-year-old. This is interesting. Well, I don't know.
So he's a copper?
He's a copper, yes.
But when he was 15, he pretended to be German.
An Australian in Germany.
In Australia.
Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting.
Germany, not Australia.
Okay. Well, understood.
Anyway. It carries on. I am one of the many Spotify listeners, so leaving a review is not straightforward. However, I have found a solution. For the last few months, and you'll love this, Matt, I have slowly retuned various police cars and desk radios around the station to Greatest Hits and favourited it. See attached photos, which should surely qualify me for some tat.
Definitely.
A mug, perhaps.
Definitely.
And there's a couple of cars and a desk radio. It's all been retuned to Greatest Hits. And it says, why email now? Well, I have listened religiously since 2015 at the old place, and you've accompanied me at various key points in my life, the birth of my child, various dog walks, military deployment, traffic jams, divorce, hashtag...
We were there when you were getting divorced. Goodness me.
I am about
That's
to...
That's not a hashtag crying face emoji.
No, it's just a crying face emoji. Hashtag. But, you know, taking Matt's lead. I'm about to embark on a 3-day road trip around France with the child, and your podcast will accompany us. And hearing this will be a great surprise for him. My son Jude is now 7, or specifically 7 9/12. He enjoys the confession. I pre-listen and mute certain ones. I've got no desire to explain what Pampers Grass is.
What is Pampers Grass? Come on, Dad.
And my favourites are unfortunately from the old place that shall not be named. The mum who tricked her child into thinking you could grow solar panels. Or the mighty Van Kleist, who I've followed on social media since the confession.
I don't remember that. No. Mighty Van Kleist.
Yeah, I have a vague memory of it, but I would need to remind myself as to what it is.
Because you don't want to say what it is.
There's definitely... No. I know that there was something... But I don't know exactly what it is. It rings a bell, but not enough to know. So well, maybe we'll...
I've erased
and the solar panels
before
one.
2018.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Thank you for your company over the years. I see it as a civic duty to carry the torch to the next generation of listeners. A thoroughly deserved 5 stars. Au revoir. Mange 2, Matt.
Well
what's
done.
The, what's the Mange 2 bit?
That's from Only Fools and Horses, isn't it?
Is it? Oh, okay.
Mange 2.
Mange 2.
Mange 2.
But yeah. I like that he's retuning all of the radios.
Good
That's
work.
A good
That's
thing,
very
isn't
good.
It?
Good I'm imagining work. Him as like Matthew Good in Department Q, although I'm the only person here watching it, so none of you can get it.
This is a great reference.
But he could be, Matt could be like quite a tough guy, and I wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of Matt.
I think we should
probably send Mark.
Can we send him something soon?
Let's send him a mug, absolutely.
Okay, listen, Matt, thank you very much indeed. And it was very nice to accompany you through all the different stages of life. And the Pampers Grass does need to be explained, maybe, but not just now.
Not just now. No
Come
need.
Back, Jude, when you're 21.
Yeah.
Also. I mean, I didn't know what it was, and...
And you're 43 now.
That's true, yes.
Get your gardener to remove the Pampers Grass. From outside your new house. Yes. Keep your additions to the parish notice board coming. Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Couple of mentions. Matt Cherry, Sutton, Don, Norman Kelly, Helen Duxbury, Phil G. Morgan, Michelle, Ed Howard. You got in touch with the secret code phrase from last week, which was, of course, make my saddle wipe clean. Mm. Matt will have a new secret code phrase at the end of the podcast. You know what it is already?
No, I don't.
Oh, my goodness.
So stand by, everyone.
Right now, it's time for the Not For Broadcast section, starring Mark Knopfler. Here we go. Not For Broadcast number one is all about Tim. Tim, taking your uncle's ice cream van for a joyride with your mates is completely unacceptable behaviour. You stole the van. You didn't even have a licence to drive it.
Oh,
so we're
really
in illegality territory.
No.
You also left a lot of children very upset when they expected a 99 and you didn't stop. So, like, crimes against kids and also just crime against the Queen.
And also, it's now... And all of them. He's just driving a van around. If he's not stopping to give people ice creams, then all you're doing is driving around a van.
Yes.
It's not an ice cream van anymore. Yeah.
And he hasn't got a licence.
No.
So,
no, but it still would be an ice cream van, though, if you've got, like, the little tune playing or something.
But you can't play that whilst you're driving?
Yes, you can.
They play it while you're driving.
Yeah.
Pretty
sure.
You need the licence, and then you need the ice cream licence, because...
The ice cream licence,
There is an ice cream licence.
What?
The licence for the ice cream, Yeah.
You get it from the post office.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it's seven and six.
7 and 6 for the ice cream licence. I think so. Free with your SO stamps.
Also.
What is happening?
Also, Rachel. Yes, you, Rachel. I know you have a thing against ladies called Emily, but refusing to give someone an office job at your company because of their name, despite being their best qualified person, is actually illegal. So clearly, Rachel has taken something's happened in Rachel's past, taken against Emily. Yeah. Someone applies for a job who just has the same first name and you don't give them the job.
But people do, you do sort of take against... certain names in life, don't you?
When you can't discriminate.
No, that's so true. You can't. You really can't discriminate.
No.
That's so true.
Yeah. You would?
I definitely do.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Rachel and Tim, we're very, very disappointed in your general outlook and behaviour and the way your life has turned out. Time to return to the confessions with Gary's marble confession. Summer, summer, summertime.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Father Simon and the Confessional Collective. It's the summer of 1976.
Of course.
I've changed names and locations just in case. Being an only child from the age of 5 to 11, I spent the school holidays with my grandparents in, well, let's say, Trumpton. My large collection of 1970s comics came mainly from my holidays with them. This is Dandy, Beano, Whizzer and Chips, that kind of thing. As well as my love for canned fruit and ice creams, all date from this period. By the time I was about 8, I had befriended a lad called Ben, who lived 3 doors away from my grandparents and was a couple of years older than me. We had some great summer fun, like the time we decided to have a test match in my grandparents' front garden using a real cricket ball. Unfortunately, the slip cordon wasn't that great, and the match was abandoned when the ball was edged through the glass pane of the front door.
Yeah.
Oh,
or the occasion when we were playing pitch and putt in the back garden with a real golf ball. Again, this time the game was also called off when the ball went through the lounge window. It was a good job that I was their favourite grandchild. Also, their only grandchild, so that narrowed it down a bit and made it more helpful. Being in a rural setting, the secondary school in Trumpton had pupils from the surrounding area, so apart from Ben, I didn't know anyone else. So to the summer of 1976, the school holidays for me started a week earlier than Ben's, so that meant I was around for the Trumpton secondary school fete. The school was only a 10-minute walk away, so with a pocket full of change, off I went to the fete on my own, different times. I arrived with about an hour of the fete left. There was a multitude of stalls, mostly being run by the teachers and an unlucky few pupils that had been roped in to help. The stalls included Name the Bear, which is an odd one, I think, Splat the Rat, Tombola, Jumble Stall, Cake Stall, Fishing for Pop, and How Many Marbles Were There in the Jar, which is kind of self-explanatory, really. Mm-hmm. You had a jar, and then you had some marbles. They were just some of the stalls. There was also a planned dancing display, followed by the awards and prizes at the end of the afternoon. First stop, then, was the Tombola. Picking out a raffle ticket, 5p a go, and a ticket ending in 0 or 5 being a winner, after a couple of goes, I won a key ring. My next target was the Fishing for Pop stall, with the first person to get the ring on their fishing rod over the neck of a bottle of pop. The bottles were quite fluorescent back then, orangeade, limeade, cola, and my favourite, cherryade. As I had arrived a bit later to the fete, not all 6 fishing rods were taken, increasing my odds of winning. First go, no luck, I just couldn't properly line up the ring to the bottleneck. Second go, with the winner of the last game departing, it left 4. With a bit of luck and judgment, I won and I proudly walked away with my glowing bottle of Cherryade, radioactive for certain. I had a bit of a wander around, ended up at the Guess the Marbles in the Jar stall. It was 10p a guess, the prize being £5 for the nearest guess. It's quite a large jar, Father Simon, like the large pickle jars that could be found at a fish and chip shop. Well, I picked it up, it was quite heavy, turned it around, gave it a little shake. I thought, there's a lot of marbles in there. And at that moment, the number 423 popped into my head. I'd paid the 10p, I wrote my guess and the name on a sheet of paper and had a 30-minute wait for the awards and prizes to be given out. I used up the rest of my money on a fairy cake and iced pop, and then it was time. The prizes were handed out. The bear's name being Barnaby, who was to know. And then it was the marbles in the jar competition, and the number was 423.
Wow, spot on.
My name was called, and I popped up on stage, shook the headmaster's hand, and he gave me £5. What a great afternoon. Make me a winner in the 1980s.
It was, wasn't it?
Now for the confession. 423, I have to say, wasn't a random number. It was the exact number of marbles that Ben and I had counted into the jar the previous day. Ben had been responsible for the marbles in the jar, and then had to be on the stall during the fete. He split the money and we were able to buy a couple of new Scalectrix cars to run on our Brands Hatch layout that we had in my grandparents' garden. I ask forgiveness for all the other people that put down their guesses as we had pretty much rigged the competition. Although looking back, I'm not sure that we ever considered the scenario where someone else guessed the exact number. Luckily for us, That never happened. There are a couple of side confessions regarding my grandparents' dog, Sandy, real name, around the time of this confession regarding the Trumpton School cockerel and a Welsh sheep, but maybe that's for another time.
Yes, definitely.
I think that probably is for another time, but I'm already intrigued, and my guess is that the cockerel didn't come out of it particularly well.
No, they never do.
But I'm guessing here, probably the sheep also doesn't feature very much of a future. Anyway, 423 marbles. Yes, because 423 marbles were counted in the first place. Sister Susie, what do you say?
Well, I've got a few bones to pick with Gary, I think. First of all, the fact that he picked Cherry Oat over Dandelion and Burdock, which clearly was the best pop that you could have got from the pop man, in my opinion, yes. But then also, playing cricket and golf near windows is just danger. What is it with boys? And just, that's so silly, you're going to break things. But essentially, it comes down to the fact that you cheated with the marbles, didn't you, Gary? And I'm going to frown upon it because I don't like cheaters. So for that reason, I don't forgive.
I think what you're saying with the golf is...
Yes.
Yes. High voltage.
Indeed.
Yes. Anyway, Brother Matthew, what do you say to Gary?
Yes, I'm going to forgive. Surely it's down to the... aren't the organisers supposed to make sure that if you're the one involved in putting the marbles into the jar, you don't get to guess how many marbles are in the jar? It's a bit like, we can't go on Make Me a Winner because, you know, we work here.
Yes.
So for that, you know, absolutely is down to the organisers to say that. And he did guess it right. I mean, he knew, didn't he?
Didn't guess.
So that's all fine. And he was pretty lucky for the rest of the time. So I can see why he had a fabulous time. And maybe don't play golf right next to the grandfather's window, but a little lesson in life, which we've all now learned. So for all of those reasons...
He did cheat, though.
He didn't cheat because he knew, didn't he? Not cheating, he knew. It's a completely different thing. I'm glad I made that point.
Yes.
So for all those reasons, I'm going to forgive.
Morals of a sewer rat,
correct,
as ever.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Yeah, I just want to pick up on a point here.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is the fact that we're not allowed to take part in Make Me a Winner. Because in theory, if we did take part in Make Me a Winner, our phone numbers would just go into the randomizer number thing anyway, so we've got no influence on that. So that if, for example, Matt entered Make Me a Winner and his phone rang, it would be quite legitimate.
Well,
wouldn't that be amazing?
I would say that you wouldn't answer it anyway because you're working, on air, so you're
imagine
not going to answer
though
a phone
imagine
call anyway.
Kate calls me while I'm doing the sport. That would be amazing.
It would. See, the thing is, when I was doing... as I mentioned, Winning Lines, when I did the lottery show on BBC One, I always bought a lottery ticket.
Yes.
The only times I've bought a lottery ticket is when I've been presenting the lottery.
What? And you were
because,
allowed to do that?
Yeah, because you have absolutely...
No, he's got no input, have you?
There's zero input. It's a machine over there which is operating. And so I bought a ticket because I just thought, wouldn't it be amazing if I won and I could just...
The outrage would be off the charts.
How would you know if it was your numbers? Like, were you actually stood there with your ticket watching the balls come out?
Because
otherwise, it'll just be in your pocket and you'd look at it later.
I just look at the camera
and go...
just
a little sneak.
Well,
is that 23? Oh, yes!
I would say I'll see you next week, but I won't be. Thank you very much. £26 million.
Wow.
Anyway, but we're not, just to be absolutely clear, we are not. And nor would we want to, because that would appear to be wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on, because we've got a humdinger of a confession, which you won't want to miss, because it made Matt say...
What? What? Let's play it again.
It's great. George's tale, Messing About on a River. That's on the way, but first, it's Bert's confession, Chim Chim Chiroo.
Confess All, Simon Mayo's Confessions Podcast.
Today's confession comes from Bert. Of course it does. Father Simon and the Celestial Collective. My confession dates back to the mid-1970s, when, as a student looking for a summer job, I found myself engaged as a member of the maintenance team at a textile mill in Bollington, on the edge of the Pennines in Cheshire. We're being quite specific.
We are.
That is very specific.
Yeah, I know. The maintenance team, I'm sure they wouldn't mind me saying, was an eclectic mix of long-serving time wasters who used their years of experience to avoid any kind of meaningful labour and who viewed a long-haired student in their midst with some considerable suspicion. The average working day consisted mainly of a few minutes' work interspersed with lengthy lunch breaks and tea breaks, so not unlike university, really. Anyway, this being the summer, the mill closed down for 2 weeks so that everyone could go on holiday and key maintenance work could be carried out. The mill machinery was run by a huge boiler, which had to be constantly fed with coal. Imagine the firebox of a steam train, but 10 times bigger. Every summer, the maintenance team had to walk inside the brick-lined oven and sweep soot from the walls, floor, and ceiling, following which we needed to crawl out of the back of the oven to sweep the increasingly narrowing pipework that took smoke from the oven into the massive mill chimney.
It's like the Victorian time.
Yeah. It's like a confession from 1840.
Exactly. Yeah.
As the brickwork was so hot, this work was saved until the very last day of the mill shutdown to allow the bricks to cool as much as possible. These being the days before health and safety considerations, the equipment for this task consisted of wooden blocks for knees and elbows and a hand brush with severely limited bristle coverage, no protective clothing, no face masks.
Wow.
You get the general idea. This is dirty work. Given that this work would need to take place on a Sunday, I was volunteered for the job with Walter, one of the stalwarts of the maintenance crew. Walter was an interesting character and an equally interesting shape. Imagine one of those sea mines that you see at a seaside resort. He was roughly the same shape, but with arms and legs instead of explosive spikes. He was as wide as he was tall, and his shape is relevant for the story.
Okay.
Anyway, with the mill completely still and silent, apart from Walter and me, we clambered into the brick oven and started brushing and sweeping. As you can imagine, within a few seconds, we were completely black, just eyes visible from a coating of soot. Once the oven was clean, we went into the pipework. I can honestly say that if you're looking for the definition of absolute blackness, this was it. I went in first, initially crawling and then later lying on my back, trying to brush all around me with my 3 or 4 bristles. It was hot and extremely uncomfortable, but time was passed by Walter regaling me with tales of his time as a paratrooper in the war. He volunteered as a way of being allowed out of military prison.
Okay.
This is getting like a whole movie in here.
Yeah.
And then the storytelling abruptly stopped, to be replaced by a good deal of grunting and swearing. Are you okay, Walter? I asked, and the answer I got was that no, Walter was not okay. He was, and I quote here, flipping stuck, or words to that effect. I am completely wedged in, he said. Trying to keep calm, I asked Walter, who knew that we were here inside the chimney?
Yes.
Yeah.
The other maintenance men, said Walter. But the bad news was that they didn't arrive until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. The even worse news was that the boiler would be switched on at 3 o'clock in the morning to light up the oven to get the machinery running after the holiday break.
What?
This actually is a movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
As I was the wrong side of Walter, I told him that there was no option but for me to try and kick him free. I told him rather optimistically to try to cover his head with his hands, but he reminded me that his flipping arms were pinned down his flipping sides and he couldn't flipping move them.
No.
And so there was no alternative but to wriggle back down the pipework and start kicking Walter on his head.
Oh, what?
Ouch!
And shoulders in utter, total blackness. After a couple of minutes that seemed like hours, I finally landed a telling blow on Walter's head and he moved a fraction down the pipe. I doubt that Walter had ever descended a parachute jump faster than he escaped out of the oven to freedom. I were like a cork coming out of a champagne bottle. I think I should probably have done it. I were like a cork coming out of a champagne bottle.
Oh, nice. Like it a lot. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I scrambled out after him and amazingly we both saw the funny side. More out of relief than anything else because a few minutes earlier things had been looking black in every single respect. What with the oven being switched on and us up the chimney. So, Father Simon, I seek forgiveness not for the bruises on Walter's head and shoulders but from the owners and workers at the mill, who no doubt spent the next 12 months wondering why it was that the smoke coming out of the chimney was not as plentiful as before and why the boiler didn't seem to be working quite as efficiently and potentially losing the owners some of their profits and the workers some of their bonuses until the pipework was cleaned again the following year. Suffice to say, this also marked the end of my career as a maintenance man. We have quite a few of those confessions. Needless to say, this was the last time I was rowing or the last time I was a maintenance man. A shocking story. story from the 19th century / the 1970s, Sister Susie.
Well, I'm not surprised it was the last time Bert was a maintenance man. That sounds absolutely terrifying. I don't know why Walter was chosen to go up that chimney, because if he was as wide as it was tall, I'm going to say that's probably not the best job for Walter.
It's the system, really.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I kind of think it is the system, because surely tall, skinny people are the best people to go and clean chimneys, and that must have been terrifying. So I just think you shouldn't have been doing it. Danger. Oh. Up a chimney.
Here it comes. Wow, this is smooth. Yeah. You haven't got it.
Yeah. Right, okay. Danger, up a chimney.
Up a chimney? No.
Okay. Brother Matthew.
Doesn't matter.
I'm going to forgive because he's wanting forgiveness from the managers. The managers don't need any. Well,
they sent him up there.
What are they doing? As Sue says, why are you sending the big fella into the up the chimney? At least the Victorians send kids up there, and they're small. So you know,
that's
maybe wasn't such a great idea.
No.
But still, at least they're small and not big like Walter. So, yes, all things considered, definitely forgiven.
Okay, I believe this is what we were looking for.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Danger.
Fight chimney. Oh, no. That's all there was.
Right.
Okay, so just a little short one.
Hilarious revelations from a new generation of sinners. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Today's confession comes from George. Brackets, that's my middle name. Father Simon and the Evervescently Forgiving Collective. I've been burdened with the weight of this unfortunate episode in my life for 20 years, and now fall at your feet hoping for a glimmer of redemption. In early 2004, I'd started a new job as a groundsman for a local tree surgery company. After a couple of weeks, one weekend, I was attending a birthday party in our village, and I got into conversation with a neighbour called Larry. I was rather exultantly telling him how pleased I was with my new life and how fit and healthy I felt as I filled our glasses with whiskey. Now, unbeknownst to me, I discovered that along with his many other talents, Larry was a rower. Not just any old rower, but the chairman of a local rowing club nearby. Father Simon, I am tall, 6'4" and gangly. Never been into sports and not a competitive bone in my body. But apparently, according to drunk Larry, tall and scrawny is perfect for rowing. So there and then, at that moment, somehow I got press-ganged into joining a rowing club. I arrived the next day. Larry was full of beans. He wasn't the only one. The place was a hive of enthusiastic, welcoming smiles, and Simon, I loved it. I got to choose a time slot that suited me, and Larry dutifully and patiently went about showing me how to get in and out of my skull without pitching headfirst into the icy depths. Within 3 short weeks, I'd taken off my stabilizers and got my rhythm going and was happily turning up at 10 a.m. to keenly row up and down the river, feeling pleased as punch. Never once did I take a plunge. As the weeks flashed by and the weather became more clement, things just got better and better. The river became more and more beautiful as the banks became green. The overhanging trees burst into... Get on with it. It was blissful, and I couldn't imagine a nicer way to spend my Saturday mornings. And then there was a girl, and she was called Amy. Amy had the same time slot allocated to her as I did. Hers overlapped mine by half an hour. It meant that for half an hour every week, I shared the river with her and only her. The rowable section of the river is not that long, about a mile and a half, and in places it bends and gets narrower, so one rower goes downstream as the other goes up, obviously passing each other at some point along the way. Now, Father Simon, a single person's skull has a major design flaw. You row facing backwards. You have nobody facing forwards, and it's fast, especially fast when going downstream. So there you are, hurtling backwards as fast as you can on a bendy river with an occasional glance over your shoulder, being your only navigational aid. Anyway, back to Amy. She was very, very, very pretty. But had a disgustingly handsome boyfriend who strutted around the clubhouse in very tight clothing. However, she was a joy to share the river with, and with every time we crossed, she greeted me with a beautiful smile and a hiya. and I returned a greeting with a rehearsed smile and I looked cool. Then for the duration that we rode away from each other, I'd vainly attempt to look fitter and younger than I actually am until one of us went round a bend, at which point I just let it all drop. So there the stage is set. It's a lovely late summer's day, a Saturday morning as normal. The university types who are positively dripping with muscles and untainted enthusiasm about how wonderful they were. They were around and I hung about until they'd shoved off and was happy to have the place to myself. I did my stretches, got my place, and using my oars carefully pushed myself off. Well, after a couple of warm-up lengths, I started upping my pace. The current was reasonably fast this day, so getting upstream was quite hard work. However, coming downstream was fun, and the riverbank whooshed past as I constantly checked over my shoulder where I was going. And it happened at the bend. Checking over my right shoulder, I saw a familiar head of shining blonde hair materialize. Glancing over my left shoulder, I noticed the bank getting closer, which meant I was coming into the bend. Fixing a winning smile, I made the adjustment and pulled on my oars. We crossed on the bend. I looked over to Amy with my winning smile and was greeted with her normal radiant smile back at me. Hiya, you all right? She said. At that moment, I was all right. A little distracted, but was good. And then something changed. Her face contorted. It wasn't a smile anymore. She was laughing. What could she be laughing at? I realised that in my hesitation, I'd not checked over my left shoulder. I whipped my head around and it was true, I was very close to the shore, but I was going fast. I wildly dug my right-hand oar into the water and pulled the scull around. It was fine, but I wasn't going to hit the bank. And it was at this point that I noticed many strange things. Looking at my oar, I noticed that there was a strange powdery substance floating on the water surface. Indeed, there was a sort of thick, hazy dustiness hanging in the air. What is that? I'd stopped rowing and I looked to my left. I thought, what on earth are those old people standing on the riverbank for? And why are they dressed so formally? And what is that man doing standing at the water's edge? And why do they look so upset with me? And what actually is this funny taste in my mouth?
Oh, no.
My oars sagged. Open-mouthed, I just sat there panting at the mercifully quick current dragging me away. And the dusty remnants, they went away too. Because, Father Simon, as my mind processed what had just happened, I realised I had inhaled a dead person.
What?
They had been throwing ashes of a loved one into the river.
My goodness me.
And I had inhaled half of it. I half choked, half gagged in response. And laughed. I couldn't help it. It wasn't a loud laugh. It was a mirthful laugh. It was just a response to a ludicrous situation in my weak defence. How could I have known? I drifted and rather soullessly rowed the short distance back to the club, the wind in my sails extinguished. I disembarked, rather frantically dusting myself off. And then I had a very, very long shower.
Oh, dear.
It's an image that has never left me and a taste I will never forget.
I never rowed again.
Who do I seek forgiveness from? Well, I'm genuinely sorry. I hope that in time the old people got to see the funny side of it. In the end, the person whose ashes were being scattered really did get the last laugh. Thank you for reading my sorry tale. And poor old Amy got forgotten there. I thought it was going to be some kind of catastrophe with Amy, but no, it's a dead person. Well, it took an unexpected twist. What do you say, Sister Suze?
Well, George, I'm on his side, really. Like, how are you supposed to see where you're going if you're facing the wrong way? So I do think maybe there is a slight design flaw, but I feel like he was too distracted by Amy to pay attention to what he should be doing, and he didn't look over his other shoulder, and therefore, if he had, he would have seen them, and I don't think I can forgive him for that reason.
Yes, it's the elderly mourners who might have been annoyed, I suppose. What do you say, brother?
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming at all. Neither did George, as it turned out.
No.
I mean, why are they're scattering the ashes a bit willy-nilly, aren't they? I mean, they know that all these rowers keep coming past. It's the run. It's where the rowers always row. And yet they've gone out there and they've tossed about with the ashes and then of course your man has caught it in his face. So that's not on. I'm on his side there, very much forgiving. A bit sad that the Amy thing didn't happen. I was thinking that was going to be a nice meet cute, as the kids call it. But it turns out it didn't. She went off with Skinny Man and his dripping muscles. So for all of those reasons, I'm going to forgive. Yes.
Confess All. Simon Mayo's Confessions Podcast.
Skinny Man and his dripping.
Yeah, that was in the confession.
The boyfriend.
Yeah.
What's the me cute thing?
Meet cute.
What is meet cute?
It's a thing in movies.
It's a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
It's it's the kind of how you meet, how the couple
so
meet.
So, like, Julia Roberts and Hugh
Grant.
Fernley Ding Dong. Yeah, him. In Notting Hill.
Notting Hill.
When they meet, when they meet, she knocks over, she knocks his, doesn't he? Well, one of them knocks the drink into the other one, doesn't
he? This is the worst.
Meet cute. And everyone said at that time, everyone went, that is a meet cute.
Meet cute. I have never heard of that.
Meet cute is a scene in two people meet for the first time, typically under unusual, humorous or cute circumstances, and go on to form a future romantic couple.
Wow.
Yeah, couldn't you argue that every couple meeting is a meet cute?
No.
No.
Okay.
It has to happen in some comical, silly way, isn't it? Isn't that the whole point of it?
Yeah, it is. It's supposed to be fun and a bit. It's the sort of thing that, you know, very annoying, let's be honest, couples sort of bring up at dinner parties about how they met. And it's like, oh. And then you say, oh, we just met. You know.
We just met.
You know, yeah. And it was
anyway
standard. Anyway, this is the best content.
Led
anyway.
To complete forgiveness on the people's verdict, including this.
And finally, Sam says, forgiven. He should have looked over his shoulder, but equally, the people scattering the ashes should have been more aware of rowers going past. Incidentally, I laugh so suddenly and loudly that the person sitting next to me on the bus has changed seats. Lol.
We also received this email from Ian after George's confession. Hi, Simon, Matt, Susie, Holly and the team. I'm a regular listener to your show while driving home from work in the evening. I have to say the confession about the man inhaling the ashes of the dead person was the best and funniest that I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
I was driving at the time and I was laughing so much that I had to pull over so I didn't have an accident. Keep up the brilliant work, Ian in Bangor, Northern Ireland. Thank you, Ian, a very, very astute and wise man. If you employ Ian in Bangor, give him a promotion and a pay rise. That's what I'm saying. If you don't get a pay rise, just write to Susie. She'll sort that out.
Okay.
Because that's what producers can do. That wraps up another week of confessions. If you've been inspired by any of them, do send them to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Now it's over to Brother Matt, who has inspirationally come up with a secret code phrase.
Yes. And this week's code phrase is ice cream license. Ice cream license is your code phrase for this week.
If you've managed it this far, you can thread me at Mr. Simon Mayo on Threads or post it to me on Blue Sky. Remember to share the podcast with a friend in the shower and leave us a glowing 5-star review or more if possible. Although, obviously, on Spotify, that's very difficult. We'll be back next week with another bunch of very fine confessions. Until then, from the pub, Sister Susie says...
Goodbye.
From the cupboard of tat, Sister Holly...
See you later, alligator.
From the gutter, Brother Matthew.
Goodbye.
Thank you very much indeed for listening.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. Want to confess? Simon Mayo would love to hear your story. He may even keep it to himself.
He definitely won't keep it to himself.
Send gory details, please, to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk.
That was great.
Fab, well done, everyone.
Number really
one
good.
Podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Smashed it out of the park.
In the can.